Hello, everyone. This is Nicholas Kattman with the FDA Group. Welcome to the Life Science Rundown. Before we jump into our discussion for today, just a little bit about the FDA Group. We help life science companies in the areas of quality assurance, regulatory affairs, clinical operations, commissioning, qualification, and validation, as well as CMC. We offer three different engagement models, which are consulting, staff augmentation, and full-time employee recruitment. So if you ever find yourself in need, just head over to thefdagroup.com to check us out and get in touch. So today I am speaking with Vincent Cafiso. Hey, Vincent, how are you doing?
I'm great, Nick. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. So the topic of today is we're going to be talking about a quality culture, culture quality. What does it mean? What are people talking about when they bring up this term? So before we jump into that, could you introduce yourself and your background?
Yeah, no, I'd be happy to. Vin Cafiso, I'm the founder and managing consultant for a consulting firm called Practical Compliance Results, where I focus in on all things quality, inspection readiness, compliance, and that sort of thing. So if you have any needs for anything like that, just hit me up. Most likely through LinkedIn is probably the best place to get me.
Okay, very cool. Yeah. So so quality culture, people use that term pretty frequently. So when you hear that, what's your kind of your first reaction if somebody says, I have a culture of quality or a quality culture?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And well, you know, first of all, thanks for having me, Nick. This is really something that I like to talk about. And it's something that I feel is the beginning stages of how you can get to the point where you maybe feel like you're ready for an inspection or where you feel like you are fully compliant. You really can't be, in my opinion, you know, you really can't be fully compliant to, you know, whatever quality system regulations or standards you need to be compliant to, unless you really have a good quality culture, because to me, that talks to the people and it talks to the actions of those people that work for that company. And that really is where it makes a difference. And it could be, you know, you have all these great procedures and you have all these great processes, but it's the people that execute. And if they're not executing it with that mindset, you know, you could be leaving something on the table, so to speak, in terms of the full experience of quality and culture as we refer to it.
Yeah.
But to your question, I feel that sometimes when I hear somebody say, "Oh, we have a great quality culture," I don't really get much more than that. Like, I don't understand from what they're saying, you know, what do they mean by that? And so, you know, this topic, you know, and in preparing for this topic, I really wanted to try to call back some of my own experience, you know, either working for FDA as an investigator or, you know, going in and, you know, auditing and inspecting hundreds of medical device manufacturers, right? You kind of, just by virtue of being there, you kind of can almost gauge the quality culture. And then obviously moving into industry, you know, and I've been doing this for 30 years. So I've been in and out of many, many different companies, not only as an investigator, but as a, you know, an employee, but also all of the suppliers that have supplied my companies that I've worked for. So, you know, I probably have been in and out of, I don't know, 500 to 1,000 companies. And so you kind of, just by virtue of that, you can kind of understand whether or not you feel like the company has a quality culture, really by the way that you're treated or by the way that people talk, mm-hmm. Or how they refer to one another, or how do they refer to other departments, or how do they refer to quality, right? How can we have a conversation about quality culture without talking about the department of quality? If we're talking about, you know, within the confines of medical device and life sciences, certainly a quality culture can benefit, you know, many, many different companies can benefit from a quality culture, not just companies that are in the life sciences, you know, space. So, yeah, so long-winded answer, but my feeling is that when I hear that word, it is almost, you know, like words without a meaning. And so I really wanted to try to drill down and figure out what are the hallmarks based on my experience that I've seen of a good quality culture.
Yeah, and I think it all starts with the definition, because every company has a culture, whether they believe they do or not, right? And so the question is are you going to allow the culture to happen, or are you going to be intentional about creating the culture that you want, right? So I think if we're talking about a company that is using a culture of quality as more than a cliche and is actually intent on creating that, we have to define what is it that we're creating. So how would you define a culture of quality?
Yeah, great. You know, that's really what it comes down to, right? So, I don't know, about 15 years ago, I started working for a company, great company. But when I got there, I was confused because I didn't know all the players. I didn't know the quality system. But what I saw was a very healthy gravitation, if you will, toward conflict. And it wasn't conflict for the sake of causing ruffled feathers or causing problems. It was, we have a problem and we are not going to avoid this problem. We're going to talk about it. We're going to wrestle it to the ground. We're not going to be seeking some sort of artificial harmony, over constructive debate, right? We don't want to avoid that. And I hadn't really worked somewhere like that before. And I came to appreciate it because we never really left a room without knowing where everyone stood and where everyone needed to do what they needed to do. So, you know, especially when you're working in quality, right? You're going to always be at the table with operations, with R&D, with engineering, right? With all of the folks that are key stakeholders in the ultimate success of the company. So to me, the definition would, you know, there are different elements of it, right? So I read a book about probably around that same time frame, and it was the 5 dysfunctions of a team.
Oh, I was just about to talk about that. You stole my thunder.
Sorry. So
go
sorry.
For it.
But I think like 3 or 4 of them are, to you know, in my opinion, really underpin what we're talking about here in terms of a quality culture, right? So we talked about not avoiding conflict, right? So getting through the conflict so that you can come up with a resolution and a plan to eliminate that conflict, right? Trust is massive in terms of being able to work together and having good working relationships with each other, mm-hmm. and seeing each other as people, not just as the quality guy, the operations guy, the R&D guy, right? And commitment to, you know, what it is we decided to do, right? So if we had that conflict, we hashed it out, we had that discussion, we came to agreement. I may not be fully in agreement, but I understand your point. You may not fully agree with me, but you understand my perspective and my experience and what brought me here. And so that commitment that you all have to moving forward beyond the point of conflict. And then the next step of that is essentially accountability, right? We mm-hmm. had the conflict, but we trust each other to get through it. We are now committed to the solution, and we're now going to be holding each other accountable to moving to the next, you know, moving to the next step, whatever that is, whatever that looks like in terms of improvement, in terms of solving a problem, in terms of, you know, the way we lead our people, what have you. So to me, that, you know, so there's not really just one definition, but I think there are, you know, elements that all kind of sort of weave together to kind of give you that feeling and give you that understanding as to like whether or not you feel like there's a quality culture.
Yeah. And just to add on to that point, I think Patrick Lencioni was the one that wrote the book. So to paraphrase, right, first you need a certain level of trust so that you can have conflict. Because if you don't feel safe, you're not going to feel comfortable speaking up. So I disagree with you, politely speaking. Here's my point of view. And then to your point, after it's been, you know, you have identified, discussed the issue, you have to come up with what are we going to do, commit to it, whether you like it or not, hold each other accountable. And then the tip of the spear is results. Results doesn't mean you win, but it means you're optimized, right? So does it mean that 31 out of 32 NFL teams aren't achieving results every year? No. It really, the definition of results is, are we operating at an optimal level? And if there's a competitor at that, in that particular season, that is just, you know, stronger and more efficient, and there's nothing you can do in that particular season, you know, work toward getting better in the following season, right?
Yes.
So we talked a little bit about, you know, the definition of a quality culture. You know, I guess the next question is, because we hear this, for lack of a better term, cliche. So let's take maybe one step back or to the side and say, why have a quality culture, right? We hear this term being thrown around, but why?
Right. And I think the why, you know, it has to do with, I think, the behaviors of the employees, right? So again, we've discussed what we believe, you know, the hallmarks of a good team and of good working relationships, right? And these are the foundation of a good company are the people. And when you have that, you know, right off the bat, you have that healthy, healthy diving in, if you will, of conflict, right? You're not avoiding the conflict, all right? So when you don't avoid conflict, you're able to resolve problems. And so, you know, resolving problems, what could that look like? That could look like, you know, addressing customer complaints in a way that results in a product that's much improved and will result in less problems with that product. When there's trust, like we talked about, you have employees at all levels of the organization that are able to speak up, right? And say, hey, I think there's a better way to do something, right? Because they trust that their input will be valued and expected, right? In a good, healthy company, top management expects employees to speak up and say when they think that there's some way to do something quicker or some improvement to a product that can be implemented to dramatically improve the lives of patients, right? So that would be kind of the why, in my opinion, would be that you would have good functional working teams that are, like you said, results, getting to results through the trust, through the not avoiding conflict and commitment all that, and right, accountability. So, you know, those are the things that would help you set yourself up for success. And then you get to the point, like I said, where, you know, people are able to raise their hands when they feel like there's something that isn't right. Right. Which then kind of goes back into that continuous improvement loop of results. Right. And what would that be? Right. What would be the result of that? Like the why, right? So we want to do things that are more efficiently, right? So if people raise their hand, right, and they say, nope, we want to make this change, right? We want to eliminate that whole idea of, nope, this is not my job. I don't work in quality. I'm not allowed to improve something. It's really their job because they own change control, right? So if you have a company that understands that every employee understands how their actions impact quality, and they consider the customer, the patient, as a family member, right? These are other kind of hallmarks of a quality culture that will get you to the point where you have results. And those results could be, like you said, you know, a more streamlined process, quicker to market, a better improved product, you know, obviously fewer complaints, fewer recalls, fewer issues with patient safety or patient harm. If you have all of those things, right, now you have a sales force that can go out and sell the product without having to hear the negative feedback that they've been hearing from the competitors, and why, you know, their customers are saying, well, you know, I heard this because this product, you know, your product isn't as good as the competitors because you have all these recalls, right? So at the end of the day, if we think of what we do as creating products for a customer, right? And that customer could be a life sciences client like you would have, or it could be, if you're working at a company, a life sciences company, right? Your company is producing a product that is hopefully, right, what you believe to be improving the lives of the patients, right? So if, as long as you have that understanding that this product is going to be used on my mom, my dad, my uncle, my sister, and you have a good quality culture of all the things that we mentioned prior, you're going to have that commitment at all levels of the organization to do what's right, right? We talked about commitment, right? So commitment and, you know, the classic definition of quality is, you know, doing something right when nobody's watching, mm-hmm. right? So if you have that kind of ingrained into the culture, and, you know, how do you get it ingrained into the culture, right? That's really the magic. To me, that's the question, right? You know, we can talk about the definition. We can talk about the hallmarks of what we believe to be a good, you know, good elements of a quality culture. But at the end of the day, do you ingrain it in procedures? Do you, you know, and, you know, the answer is kind of yes, right? Yes to everything, right? So top management has to be committed to some of these things that we talked about, you know, including setting the tone from the top that we have a quality culture. And here's what we mean by quality culture. And we're going to talk about the patient, right? We're going to, all of the decisions that we make as top management are going to be guided by how it could improve the life of the patient. It's not going to be guided by revenue or EBITDA or profit margin, right? It's the decisions that we make are based on how can we improve the lives of our patients and get our patients living their best life. Hmm. So that can be documented, right? That could be documented in the form of a quality policy. That could be reiterated every single quarter at a management town hall, right? Where management gets up and they talk about why this product is so great and why this product is improving the lives of patients and why we endorse the speak up culture, because we believe that the speak up culture is going to result in us identifying problems and solving those problems. And we're going to hold everyone accountable to taking the actions that they need to take to get the results to improve the products the way that they need to be improved. You know, we're gonna seek feedback from customers, right? So we're gonna actively seek feedback. We're not just gonna passively wait for complaints to happen, or we're not gonna wait for the FDA to tell us to do a recall. We're gonna actively solicit feedback from our patients to get, you know, to get a better understanding of how we can improve the product. And we're going to focus our attentions on things that can reach that goal, right? So we're going to have focused leadership, right? We're going to clearly set the direction as to which projects we're going to take on, right? And how to tie those projects into improving the lives of the patients. And also, as you know, and sometimes in quality, right? Especially in life sciences companies where products get manufactured, sometimes they fail and we just have to scrap them because they failed. Sometimes they sort of fail, right? Where it's like a soft requirement that, you know, it doesn't look great, but we really don't want to scrap that
still
lot.
Still in spec, yeah.
Right, still in spec. So, you know, how does top management address those like gray area quality issues, right? Mm. That's a big deal, right?
Well, and that's kind of the where most of these questions come into play, because mm-hmm. where it's black and white, there you go. Right now, right. It's just more of an issue of compliance more than what should we do. It's the gray areas about what should we do.
Right.
You know, as you've been talking, I've been kind of coming up with different questions, and I'm going to do something I shouldn't do. And I'm just going to throw them all at you in a smorgasbord of questioning and see if you can handle it. So the first thing that kind of popped in my head is, you know, I'm working in a company. I'm told we have a quality culture. So first of all, how does somebody know if they're in a company that has a good quality culture? How would you measure a quality culture, right? So it's probably not black and white, again, to our point of the gray area. So is it good, neutral, bad, however we want to measure it? So how do we measure that? And maybe you have some examples in your head.
Yeah.
You talked about some of the elements of a quality culture. So, you know, to piggyback on that, definitely want to hear more about, you know, what are the elements or the components of a quality culture that a foundational that people have to say, all right, let me make sure I have these 5-7 things.
Yeah.
Another thing is what conflicts with a quality culture. So there's got to be a push and pull. You talked about profit and EBITDA. That could be a kind of a pull, push and pull scenario with a quality culture. And then my final question, to just add on to everything, is how do I know if we're starting to veer off track? So we had a really good quality culture, but what are some of the signs, the warning signs that we're starting to veer off from the quality culture that we had?
Yeah. No, great questions. You know, if I was going into a company and, you know, part of my, even if the company said to me, hey, Vin, you know, we submitted a PMA, you know, we really think that the FDA is going to probably want to come out to see us in like 6 to 9 months, maybe a year, but we really want to get you in sooner rather than later because we want to make, you know, we want to be inspection ready, right? I wouldn't start with, you know, what was the result of your last audit, right? From your notified body, or how many complaints do you have? Or let me get a look at your list of CAPAs. I would actually start by interviewing all of the heads of the different departments and the CEO. And I would want to understand, you know, how do they operate from the standpoint of quality, and not quality as a department or as the owner of the quality system, but just what we're talking about here. Do you make the decisions like we talked about from the basis of what's good for the customer? And, you know, do all employees, you know, as I walk around, right, and I start to interview employees about what they do, you know, do they know how their role impacts the quality of the product? Do they know that the company has a policy that they've established which talks about quality, right? Do they, you know, what are their perspectives from the quarterly town halls? And if they say, well, what are you talking about? We don't have town halls, right? So these are the things that I would be using to understand whether or not there is some semblance of a quality culture. You know, you might hear, if I interview, say, you know, all of the heads of the different departments, and then I interview, say, 10, you know, random employees, you know, you might get mixed feelings. You might get some employees that have been there for a very long time that may be disillusioned, and that may be kind of on the way out in terms of their interest and their account commitment to the company, mm-hmm. right? And then you may get people that are there for a year or less, or maybe just over a year, where they're really starting, really trying to make a difference and trying to make changes, but they just haven't gotten a really good foothold. So there's a continuum, what I believe would be a continuum of where you would have possibly some pockets of a good quality culture and good good behavior, but then you may have other, what I would call troublemakers, who, you know, may not be in it for the right reasons that everybody else is in it for. And so typically when you see something like that, you kind of like, because you know, I guess maybe to answer your question, I feel like you wouldn't see it all bad or all good, right? I think you would see kind of like these pockets of good behavior and to answer your other question about, you know, how would I do this kind of going in? I wouldn't just, you know, walk into a conference room and try to stir up some conflict to see what everybody does, although that would be fun. But I wouldn't do that purposely, but I would do it, you know, through interviewing and through talking to people and asking them, like, you know, hey, what keeps you up at night? You know, what are some of the problems that you think this company's really facing, and how have you worked through a problem like that in the past, right? Just kind of try to understand what actions have been taken, you know, what actions have taken place. And, you know, look at certain high level documentation, you know, maybe like the company's quality manual, their quality policy, you know, do they have, what kind of training program for onboarding of new employees? I think that's really critical. And that kind of gets to, you know, the question around, you know, what are you trying, you know, how do you prevent the slippage, right? If you kind of, again, as we talk about, you know, having a having a continuum of a quality culture within the same company, where you have some really kind of fast movers and hot, you know, early adopters, so to speak, of that culture. And then you kind of have the people that are either disillusioned, you know, actively disengaged, you know, they do like these different engagement scores. Different companies, especially big companies, will do employee surveys, and they'll look for people who are actively engaged, actively disengaged, that kind of thing. And so you definitely see the actions of those people who are disengaged by, you know, how they talk about the company, how they talk about quality, how they talk about other departments, right? And how they talk about how problems are solved, and the, you know, the timeliness of action to correct things that are wrong, right? So there are a lot of these kinds of hallmarks of it, you know, where I think there's a lot of, you know, we talked about like the that's not my job, you know, disease. It really is like a really like a disease that can spread quickly. Yeah,
I've posted about that. That's that's a warning sign.
Yeah,
that somebody is not subscribing to the culture that's has been created or is in the process of being created.
Right, right. You know, and I was talking to someone a little while ago about change control. So another, so something that's, I think, also important in a company with a good culture is embracing change. You know, a quality system, just like life, a quality system is not meant to be static, right? A quality system is meant to evolve. And, you know, again, these kind of early interviews that I would be having would be like, hey, you know, tell me about what you do. Do you have any suggestions for improvements? Have you ever made those suggestions? Right. And they, you know, you would hear right away what we're talking about, right? If the answer was, you know what, I have such great ideas, nobody will listen to me, I've been here this long, I've been doing this job this long, everybody thinks that they're smarter than me, and I can never get anyone to listen, right? So you would hear that, and right away you would know we've got a problem, right? On the flip side, you might talk to someone, and they could be a low level production technician or a quality control inspector, right? And say, well, tell me about, you know, a time where you were able to actually implement some sort of an improvement. Mm-hmm. Oh, you'll never believe this, right? And they'll go into how they were previously inspecting some label using a light box, but it was hard, and it helped, you know, it wasn't something that was easy, and we had all these problems. So I had been doing it for this long, and I realized, you know what, if we just did this. So what I did was I submitted a change request. I said, wow. So this is, you know, me playing devil's advocate. Wow, you're not even in quality. You're able to make a change request. Oh yeah, anybody can make a change request, right? So it's these kinds of things that you would say, wow, I really love the culture. Like anybody can make a change. No one's afraid to speak up. No one's afraid to suggest ways to make something better, quicker, easier, you know, more efficient, you know, higher quality, more effectiveness to the patient, that sort of thing. And part of this is really like what we're talking about is this not avoiding change, right? So embracing change, and not only embracing it, but because, you know, that could be a cliche, right? But having a quality system that allows changes to be agile, allows changes to happen in a relatively easily, you know, easy format, where you don't have to have 12 people approve it, where you have just the people who need to approve it, the bare minimum, right? The regulations, the 1345, the QSR, they don't say who needs to approve anything, right? So you see startup companies that are very successful where, you know, some change in production is approved by like the head of ops and the head of quality, done, right? And then you see the same change at a big company is approved by 12 people, you know, at different levels, not even out at the highest level. You have like multiple tiers of people approving the same change that would otherwise be approved very efficiently in a small company.
Yeah.
So to me, that's also part of a quality culture, is being able to not only embrace change. And again, this would be evidenced through, you know, town halls and things like that, where we celebrate success, we celebrate, you know, accomplishments and changes that we've made and improvements that we've made. And we highlight people that suggested changes to make our lives easier or to make the patients' lives better, right? So these are the, all of this is kind of woven in, and I think it really would be fairly easy to detect within a few hours, really, of really asking the right questions all up and down the management chain. Because, you know, I shouldn't say you know, but I can say I've seen where you'll be sitting with managers in the quote unquote front room, right? And you'll get the song and dance of what they think you want to hear. And then you go and talk to just one level down, and they actually tell you what, you know, what the reality is. So, and again, to me, that would be, well, this is not good. Either they're trying to hide something from me, or they're trying to portray a culture that really isn't fully here. And, you know, that's really where I feel like I want to step in and I want to help.
Yeah. To your point about the person that was able to initiate a change in the company and they weren't in quality, you know, and then right before that, you talked about the person that has great ideas, but nobody will listen. I have a couple kind of stories or anecdotes. One is here at the FDA group, we don't encourage people to speak up. We require them to speak up, right? I'll tell you why. I had two employment situations, you know, before the FDA group, that kind of this, along with my education, kind of helped cement this this concept. I had this one boss, and I think people still have the nameplates they put on their desk, right? Mm-hmm. Well, his nameplate just said "think," right? And I remember I went into his office and he looks at me and I look at him and I look at the "think" thing, and I didn't say anything. I just turned around and I left because I realized I hadn't thought yet. You know, I was just being a robot and going to him, right?
Right.
So, you know, kind of thinking is part of it. Then there was another company that I worked at, and their processes and systems were horrible, right? And I remember thinking, boy, management is so stupid. You know, they're just really, really dumb. Look at how terrible these processes and systems are. Well, what I realized years later, they weren't necessarily dumb. They don't know everything. And I think that's one of the misconceptions that some people make, is they think management knows everything that's happening in the organization. Right. And, you know, not only is that not true, it's impossible, right? And so that's why, you know, it's, I think, important for leadership to say, we need you to speak up. And one of the big areas where I see this is bandwidth, right? I need to constantly remind people, I have a general idea of your bandwidth, right? I get reports and we have metrics, but I don't really know. Only you know, right?
Right.
But what I do know is there's swells and trajectories, and we'll put in 60 hours for a few weeks, maybe a few months, right? 70 hours, whatever. It's a swell. It's going to come back down to a normal working, you know, amount of time. And then there's trajectories. And those are, I'm working 50, 60, 70 hours, and there's no chance this is coming back down, right? And so it's really, we as leaders need people to speak up and tell us when we're hitting those. Because the alternative is they will get frustrated, and then they'll get more frustrated and more frustrated, and it will snowball, right? And then they'll start taking calls from recruiters. And by the time you find out they're frustrated, it's too late. They've already gone, right? And so I think that's really a big thing. As you were talking about, similar to my line of questioning before, I've got another line of questioning for you, which is, you know, it, quality culture, it's not yes or no, generally speaking, it's a spectrum. So I'd really like to get your opinion on what is the spectrum? How would you define good? And do you define it as good, bad, neutral? Do you define it as 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? How do you define that? And then I would say, if we have a good culture of quality, just like anything, it can atrophy, right? I can go to the gym, I hit my, you know, 240-pound bench press. I'm not done. You know, I got to keep going. Otherwise, I'm going to atrophy. And it's the same thing with culture. Mm-hmm. So if you could talk to the spectrum and then talk about maintenance, and so how we can prevent or nip in the bud deviations from that culture, so as to get them back on track.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the idea of a spectrum is definitely a great one, because it really does. In other words, I feel like you don't fully always have a five, right? Like a five of quality culture. You know, you probably, generally speaking, are going to kind of operate somewhere in like the 3 to 4 if you're actively working on it. And if you're actively not working on it, you're going to be obviously, you know, less than that. And it could be that the company is, you know, and there's like that saying, you know, what got you here won't get you there, right? So you could have a company that's in a very early stage where this kind of like shut up and do what I tell you to do kind of mentality, don't ask questions, just take direction. It might work in the very early stages when you have a founder who's just brilliant and has this idea, and it has to get implemented and it has to get put into the form of a box of whatever that, you know, looks like. But then you have to kind of then get to the point where that box has to be progressed to something that someone can use or that someone can use on some other person. And so that attitude is not going to get you much further than that, because you're not going to attract good quality talent. Again, the underpinning of all good quality cultures, a five, a two, is the people, right? So you're not going to attract a good candidate, or if you attract them because the technology is so cool or the upside is really there, you know, for the potential of this technology and a buyout and stocks and all that stuff, right? You might attract people there, but you're not going to keep them there with a culture of a one or a two, right? People just want to be treated with respect. They want to be heard. They want to work. They want to, in other words, like they want their, what they're, right? You 50, 60, 70 hours, right? They want the time that they're spending on work to matter, and they want it to be spent on something that matters. And so that's true to a certain extent, right? And that will get them the motivation to continue to do what they're doing. But if they're taking so much negative experience through the way they're being managed or the way they're being talked to or the way they're being treated, then they're gonna leave. They're not gonna stay. And so, yeah, I think that spectrum is always going to be kind of checking in and out, depending on the active engagement that folks have to knowing that we have to maintain this quality culture. We got here. Let's not lose it. And, you know, you're going to lose employees, right? That's just the name of the game. You're going to have attrition. You're going to have employees that want to progress. They can't progress within the company that they're in. They love that company. They love the culture. They feel like they're committed to everything. They trust, right? They all of that. They hold themselves accountable. But if they can't, and so that would be somebody who you don't want to lose from a quality standpoint, right? Their quality bench strength is off the charts in terms of the culture, I mean, then they leave, right? They move on and we backfill. Right. So now we're going to backfill with someone who may have worked at that very early stage startup, and they thrived in that environment of just shut up, do what I tell you to do. Right. So now they're coming in and they're diluting that quality culture that was at a four. And now this person has a really good presence, a really strong presence, but their quality culture is at a one. I mean, you know, one employee is not going to bring a quality culture from a 5 or a 4 down to a 2, but
it can be infectious.
It could be infectious, right? And that's, you know, you so in order to continue with it, I think this is the biggest opportunity. So not only is it, you know, everyone who's on board, we're going to continue to have trust. We're going to continue to have active conflict and productive conflict. We're going to hold each other accountable. We're going to get results and all that commitment that we talked about, that, you know, we're going to think about our employees as decision makers, as change agents. We're going to think of our customers as our family member, right? So all of these things that really are ingrained in all of this is going to be celebrated every single month or every quarter at, you know, at town halls. And we're going to hear from top leadership about how they really, like you mentioned, they really want to hear our feedback. They want to improve. They embrace change, right? So this is just a 4 or a 5, right? This is a great quality culture where you have all of this excellent behavior by employees that are in all levels of the organization, right? I mean, couldn't ask for anything better. You've got people knocking down the door to get in because they heard from all the other employees how great this company is and the journey that they're on. Right? So now you have a new employee come in. And if that new employee isn't onboarded properly, right? So I think this ongoing effort is really to make sure that that onboarding, you know, they don't just sort of get to go on their own, but they have to understand that this is the way we operate and this is how we're so successful is because of this culture. And so the training program that they receive early on isn't only going to be, well, you know, we're a regulated company. We have to comply with FDA's QSR. We have to comply with ISO 13485, but there's these other things. And it should really talk about what we're talking about here, right? We should talk about the trust and the building of relationships. There should be team building happening actively, especially with new people, you know, that come in. Those ideas, you know, and the fact that, hey, wait, I could actually raise my hand and I can go to my boss and tell him or her that I don't like the way this process is running. And I think that we can do it so much better. And I don't mean to offend anyone. And I don't know who created this. Right. And then put that person on a pedestal, you know, week 2 or month 2 or whatever it is. Right. So this is how this is really, it's a vulnerable period of time for a company when they lose people and bring in, or if they don't lose anybody, but they're going through like a growth spurt where they have to bring in a large group of people, you know, they have to bring in 10% of, you know, the employee goes from 100 to 110, right. You now are diluting the culture with people, which is sometimes is a really good thing, right? You want to bring in diversity of thought, right? And when we talk about culture in the context of quality, we're talking about all the things that we just talked about, but we're talking about, right? At the end of the day, we're talking about everyone having a voice and a speak up culture. And to me, that's diversity of thought, that we are not going to just do it the way we've always been doing it, because it got us here. And so it may very well get us there. It really is bringing in that thought and celebrating that thought. And so to maintain it, really, it's a really hard, it's an ongoing effort. And it really has to be actively engaged by leadership from the top down and then allowing the culture to build from the ground up. But it has to start from the top down and allowing employees that safe space, like you said earlier.
Yeah. And it's never, I don't want to say it's never a destination, but if you achieve a 5, it's fleeting. Right. And yes. There was a book, I got it on my case somewhere, but they had 5 different categories. Right. And the first category was a team of destructive people, stealing, breaking. Then the second category was a team of, you know, this company is terrible, but they're not destroying things. And then the third one was, you know, me, you know, I'm doing really good. I care about my contribution. The 4 is we as a company. And then the 5th element was, you know, a company that really doesn't view themselves as having any competition, right? They're out there creating something brand new. And that, you know, that level of achievement, again, I think it's fleeting. And so it kind of comes and goes. The other thing that I wanted to say is, on that topic, and I lost my train of thought because my camera froze. I think it's going to come back to me.
Yeah, but what you were just saying about the, you know, that continuum that you just mentioned, and one of them having to do with me. I think another hallmark of a good quality culture is that replacement of the individuality and, you know, favoring it, the success of the team, right? So I'm not successful unless we're all successful. And I think that's another element of it. Again, kind of like, how do you know when you see it? It's kind of like based on these kind of interviews and how people react to certain questions around, you know, tell me about a time where, you know, you were successful, or tell me about a time where something had to be solved, right? And if that person goes right into, well, I did this, I did that, I told them, or do they go into, well, you'll never believe it, you know, I had this idea, but I just wasn't fully sure how to figure it out, right? So I went to someone else, and then we went to someone else, and the three of us came together, and it was, you know, 1 + 1 + 1 equals, you know, 12. You know, we came up with this brilliant idea all together, and that, you know, that's another good, and I think that might even go back to that 5 Dysfunctions book. I think there may be something in there if I'm remembering correctly about that team concept as opposed to the individual stakeholder concept.
Yeah, there was some, it was like the 5 leadership teams or something, but I do remember my point, which was if you're not moving forward, then you're moving backward. There's no such thing as standing still. Right. And, you know, a great way to kind of underscore how important it is that, again, there is no destination, right? And I said there can be, it's fleeting, but it's really about the journey. We have to keep moving. We have to keep improving. You know, I had the huge disillusionment that my kid's childhood was going to be like mine, right? Because I'm like, oh, this is just the way it is, right? You're going to ride bikes and you're going to get into fist fights, and that's just the way it is, right? So I got my kids their bikes, you know, put my son into jiu-jitsu and never been in a fight in his life. And, you know, and you don't right. see the neighborhood kids doing their bike rides, you know, it's different. And, you know, so now we're moving ever closer into the world of AI. And so the world is always changing. It's always evolving. And I think it's on us as leaders, when we're trying to create or maintain a quality culture, it never stops. And there's right. always more to be done.
Yeah.
So, I agree. So this was a really good talk. Before we close, what do you want to leave the audience with? What's the big takeaway, or the, you know, the final nugget that you want to leave everybody with?
Yeah. I think this has been great. Thank you so much for having me here. Big fan of this format, so I appreciate being on myself. I think the big nugget, we talked about so much today, and you know, I think people really are the focal point for probably everything that we talked about, because you can't do any of this without people. And when I say people, I mean everyone from the top management down to the lowest levels of the organization that actually do a lot of what makes up the success of these companies. And so to your point, like, not taking for granted that this is work. It's not something that, you know, it's almost like a story. Like we're into the holidays, right? We're coming up to Christmas. And I think about the culture, you know, so I'm Italian American. My great grandfather came here from Sicily and brought with him a lot of traditions, and those traditions have carried over. And they are work, right? You have, you know, if we're talking about, say, Christmas Eve, right? the feast of the seven fishes, right? There's a lot of work to do that. And you almost get to the point where you're like, why are we even doing this? It doesn't matter. Just do it. You know, fry the squid. And it's almost like that with culture, right? Because you kind of have to work at it and you have to be able to understand, you know, so we talked a little bit about the why, and I think we have to understand the why can, at the end of the day, if we're talking about, again, life sciences company, the why is really to make sure that our customers are enjoying the best possible experience of little to no adverse effect of our product and only benefits, right? And so if we kind of keep that as our moral compass and we make decisions based on the patient, we act as if our parents, our siblings, our relatives are using the devices that we are directly responsible for making, and we understand how our role and how our actions impact quality, I think we're gonna have a good, you know, a good start for building that quality culture, but then maintaining it. And again, you kind of get to a point where you know it when you see it, but you also should be able to identify it when you don't have it, and then try to figure out what is the best way to get back on track. So those are just some thoughts, not one big nugget, but just a few different thoughts about how we have kind of gotten here and have talked about something that I love to talk about, because it isn't the sort of chapter and verse of, you know, 80/20/30 design controls or something like that. But we're talking about something that is alive and well in like almost every company in America, at least, right? If I could just speak for the company that I've, the companies that I've worked for or companies that I've consulted with, they do struggle with this. Big, huge companies, they'll put out these massive surveys, you know, these employee engagement surveys. Small companies, I think they just kind of get it. They just understand because it's small enough to kind of have that connection to all of the employees, directly. Mm. So I think there's also something that we maybe didn't touch on, but it's certainly a consideration. The size of the company, I think, matters as to the approach of how you get there. But I think the principles that we talked about all apply across the board.
Yeah. And I think it's to your point, even within a big company, there are tribes that are all interconnected, right? So if there's a particular segment of the organization that is losing ground, then you have to, correct and prevent that from happening to the extent that you can, because everybody feeds off each other. And you've mentioned this earlier in the podcast, it's got to start from the top down, right? So even, something with, 10,000, 30,000 employees, it can be really overwhelming. But there is a mechanism for achieving a culture of quality, even in an organization that big.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, Vin, this was fantastic. Thank you so much. And for everybody listening, as always, if you find conversations like this valuable, please share it with a colleague or your professional network. If you haven't already, subscribe to get updates of new episodes at thefdagroup.com/podcast and follow the FDA Group on LinkedIn. If you'd like to connect about project or resource needs, head over to thefdagroup.com and get in touch, or feel free to connect with me personally on LinkedIn. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll see y'all next time.